is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it?
I can feel it. You kind of blipped out there for a second, Diana, but I can
feel it. Oh, no. I don't know what happened. And also, I would like to add that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Yay! Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Cool.
And this is the Freedom Fiends. And I am Diana, the Laughing Kitty. And this is Ben, the Bearded Possum.
I'm here. And we are, we should let the listeners know if they haven't heard the show before, we are bouncing this signal like all over the U.S. to get it to them. That's why if there are any interruptions in sound, it's bouncing between, I'm down on the Gulf Coast, way down in the deep, deep south. Diana is in North Carolina, correct?
Yep. North Kakalaki, yep.
And then we're bouncing this off the GCN studios way up there in somewhere up in the Midwest in the prairie. I can't remember exactly, but wherever GCN studios, somebody's listening, pounding on their radio right now going, how do you not know where that is? But we've got a board.
Yeah, like Lewis.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like Lewis C.K. says, it's going to space, people. Come on. It's going to space.
Yeah, some board op at the GCN headquarters is pounding on his desk going, how do they not know where we are? Well, we're doing the best with what we got.
Does it even really matter? Does it matter?
Nah.
Does it matter where we are? I mean, yeah.
The story's the same, you know?
That's right.
So anyway,
happy Flag Day, Ben.
Yeah. Lou might be joining us momentarily, and you never know when Michael Dean might pop in. But so we're just going to carry the load with or without them one way or the other. So, yeah, Flag Day. Should we talk about that or wait till Lou gets here and hassle him about it?
I think we should probably wait till Lou gets here. But I just, you know, wanted to let everybody know that my end is anything or pledge or anything that you do to the flag is also idolatry. If you have any kind of religious predilections at all, it is idolatry. Just saying.
It really is. And just to kind of give an explanation of that, what you're essentially doing when you take anything, and it's not that we're particularly against America or against the flag or against whatever, against soldiers or against traditions or whatever. None of that. It's the point being strictly that Diana was talking about there, strictly from a religious point of view, you're taking an inanimate object, you're magically bestowing upon it powers that are non-human, that are beyond human, that are superhuman, and then you're giving it adoration. Now, in every way, this is the biblical description of an idol. And then when you do things like sing songs of praise to it, or you hold it up and put your hand on your heart and swear allegiance to it, all of these things, biblically speaking, are idolatry. And you can make all the exceptions you want, and you can say, you can make any kind of excuse you want, but when you take a flag and you hang it up in your church, and you put your hand on your heart, and you swear before God an allegiance to that inanimate object, that's a blasphemy, and you are an idolater, and it doesn't really matter what your pastor says about it. That's just the truth. Hey, Lou, I see Lou has joined us. Go ahead, Diana.
Tread on my rights.
Tread on your rooks.
Tread on my rights, not my flag.
That's right. Yep. And that, you know, and that's a hard truth, you know, and it's a hard truth that many of us who came to the libertarian movement a little later in life, I've had to face that truth as well. How many times I've stood in front of a flag with my right hand over my heart, reciting this thing, and really not even thinking that much about what I'm saying, you know, and not really considering it idolatry. But when you really look at it, when you examine it under a light and under a microscope, it is indeed idolatry. So there you go. It really is. Yeah, and I'm not sure how you could logically deny that.
So, Lou, go ahead, Lou.
Well, I just walked in, but I already know what you guys talked about. Because I've heard it. I've said
it's Flag Day. Happy Flag Day, Lou. And this is the first time I've been on the radio together for a while.
Oh, it's been forever. I miss you so much.
I know. I miss you too.
Well, you will be coming up here to Michigan, right?
Yes. That's the plan, Stan.
August 7th through 10th, the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition will be putting on the third annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Longer leashes. I'll just let Roxy off her leash. How about that?
Oh, yeah. She's a little sweetie. Yeah, this whole flag thing, I saw a meme not too long ago, and it's an older couple, and they're wearing their flag shirt and pants, and there's some younger guy standing behind him, and he has his hand over his heart, and it says, "I pledge allegiance to your clothing."
I really think that we should have any kind of like clothing or cloth day, any type of like cloth, or how about Towley? I was thinking Towley from South Park. How about Towley Day?
that could work. The thing that really bothers me about the flag, and this is my complete opposition to socialism, collectivism, communistic thought and behavior. So, yes, I'm about to rag on the Republicans and the conservatives and the Tea Party, because they're very communistic about their stupid flag.
Mm. You got to call a commie a commie.
They say,
don't pull punches.
That's right.
They say, don't talk about our flag. All right. That is the government's flag. How did that flag come into existence? Well, Betsy Ross sewed it or some stuff like that. But ultimately, it was adopted by the Congress passing a law saying that this is the flag of the United States of America.
America.
Yeah. So the only reason that it's the people's flag, as they say it, is because the Congress and the president gave it to them.
Yep.
And then, just to show how much it was their flag, they wrote the flag code to let the people know what they can and cannot do with their own flag. I'm sorry. That is the government's flag. You go to any government building and you will see that flag over it. You look at soldiers when they have the patches on their arms, that's a flag. Those are government employees. So that is the government's flag. You might say that it's not the government's flag, but the government and that flag are seen together quite often. As a matter of fact, they're inseparable.
Yeah, so, because they all wear those flags on their lapels and stuff like that, to show how patriotic they are. And yeah,
yes, it's called so Stockholm. Impressive. The Stockholm exactly. is strong with them. But let me take it a step further. When the Bundy Ranch was under siege by the Bureau of Land Management, the Bureau of Land Central Planning, those people out there were waving the government's flag at the government.
Oh, God.
And the government was wearing that flag on their shoulders because they had that patch.
And they weren't seeing the irony of that.
Right. So as they're tasing, as the BLM agents are tasing these protesters and these people that think that they should be able to keep their land, as they're being pepper sprayed, as they're having dogs sicked on them, as they're having goons with automatic rifles getting ready to line them up in their sights and pull the trigger, they're all waving the same flag at each other.
It's like they're fighting over the flag. Whose flag is it?
Yeah. And it's and when they're protesting in Mordor and the Potomac, they're like, well, you could tread on our rights and you violate our rights another 20, 60 times, and by golly, we're going to wave your flag at you really hard.
Take that. I'll wave it harder.
I bet when Obama looks out the window at the protesters, he says, I'm not worried so long as they're waving my flag at me.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
You can protest all you want, just as long as you pay your taxes and wave my flag.
I'll take it a little bit even meaner than that. The situation down there in Waco, Texas, with the bikers, that we may never know the entire true story of this, because there's so much garbage being thrown in every direction. It's everything from crazy conspiracy theories to outright lies from the authorities and everything in between. But it's more and more, it's becoming apparent that almost all or all of the gunshots fired were coming from cops shooting at bikers who were either unarmed or were certainly not firing back at cops. But however, whatever comes out of this is the truth. There's something really important to keep in mind in reference to this flag discussion.
Have we lost Ben? Oh, there's Ben.
if you get around a lot of bikers, you will see a lot of American flags on their jackets, on their bikes.
Yeah,
on their,
the American flag is
intricate to motorcycle riding in the United States, especially the Harley culture and so forth. And so there you have a situation where you have police planned out probably an absolute ambush onto these bikers and killed them under the American flag while they were wearing the American flag. And those same bikers don't catch that, don't realize it, and they'll go right back and rally in that area and ride around with a big American flag on the back of their bike, not realizing that they're glorifying the exact system that shot their brothers down just a few weeks ago.
I wonder how many of those bikers in Waco were Christians.
I don't know about the ones arrested.
Speaking of Christians in Waco...
Go ahead.
Speaking of Christians in Waco, if you're really upset about Christians being murdered and churches being burned, think back to Waco, like 1993.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Same song, different day. Same tune.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. They were a cult because they didn't have the required number of people to be considered a recognized religion like Catholicism, Lutheranism, statism.
Well, after the dust all settled, they were Seventh-day Adventist, which is a very well-established Christian church in the United States and in other countries, too. And in addition to all that, you know, if you recall, like I was already pretty old when that took place, and there were all kinds of lies coming from the government. Oh, they're abusing children, and we have to get in there and rescue the children, and there was all these lies.
And we have to get in there and burn those children to rescue them.
Yeah, and that's essentially
what
they did.
Because that's what they did, was they burned them.
Yeah, burned them to
death. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's exactly it.
To save them.
Yeah. You got to kill them to save. That's like when somebody calls the cops because they have a loved one that's threatening suicide and the cops show up and shoot them. Same thing.
Yeah.
Here, have some government.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Freedom Fiends.
Woohoo!
Fiend phone.
And we are talking on Fiend Phone. If you missed it in the first segment, we're talking from the Alabama coast on the Gulf of Mexico coast, bouncing up through North Carolina, all the way to Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and all the way back down to, I think it's in Omaha. I think the GCN headquarters is in Omaha.
Nope.
Is that, no?
Where? Minnesota.
Minnesota, really?
I can't remember what city, but they're really not that far away from me here in Bear Saskatchewan. I think they're just outside like Minneapolis, St. Paul area, something like that. It really wouldn't be that much trouble for me to go over there and like, you know, drive by and shout, "Hey guys, how's it going?"
They might get really alarmed about that. Really, oh no! Someone's crazy.
Yeah, they probably have soundproofing.
Yeah,
I'm sure they have soundproofing in the studios. But anyway, so yeah.
Hey, you two talk for a minute. I just realized normally I put my beard in a ponytail to keep it from grabbing the mic, the foam rubber on the mic. And I just realized I haven't done that yet. And my beard grabbed the foam rubber on the mic. It's like Velcro. It sticks to everything. So I'm going to mute my mic for a minute and put my beard in a ponytail. Chat among yourselves.
So I had something interesting happen yesterday? I don't know, a couple days ago. All these days are rolling
in
together.
In the past, yeah. Yeah.
Recently. Within
not
the
right now.
Within the past week. So anyway, I'm driving home from work, and up here, and it's very rural. It's like a 5-lane highway. You got 2 lanes going one direction, 2 lanes going the other, and then you got like the left turn lane in the middle, also known as a passing lane. But anyway, this guy's got his pickup truck, and the bed of it's full of lumber, and it's I don't know, it's like maybe 1x4s, something like that. But anyway, it's not really big lumber, but it's long. Well, anyway. Mm-hmm. For some reason, some unfortunate occurrence happened, and a bunch of the lumber flew out of his the bed of his truck, and it was
oh my goodness,
it was blocking the right lane which he was in, and then it went into the left lane next to him. So he kind of had both of the I'm not even sure if it's east or westbound lanes, but anyway, he had both of the lanes going in one direction were obstructed, and so. I pulled around in front of him, went into the left turn / passing lane, pulled in front of him, hit my four ways, and got out to help him, you know, pick this up. Now, I didn't have a megaphone or anything like that with me, no bullhorn, and, you know, I didn't get on the internet and put out a Twitter or something like that that said, hey, everybody, help this guy out. But, like, a half a dozen vehicles stopped, and people just started piling out of them and grabbing these pieces of lumber and throwing them back in the bed of the truck. And it was probably about a minute and a half, 2 minutes at the most, and all this stuff was cleared out, and everybody was getting back in their cars and on the way again. It was like total anarchy. I'm not talking about the lumber being on the road. I'm talking about the spontaneous order of people.
The spontaneous order, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, For me, I didn't really have a reason to stop because I was able to get around him, and, you know, I could have taken off, gone down the highway and hit Walmart or Arby's or whatever my next destination was. But I saw the guy was in trouble. I says, well, you know what? It's really not going to harm me a whole lot. I'm not going to lose too much of my day if I jump out and help for a couple minutes. And apparently, you know, 7 or 8 other people that were in vehicles felt the same way. And, you know, for no reason whatsoever, or maybe even it was just self-interest because they just wanted to get through the darn intersection up ahead. But the bottom line is,
regardless.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, there was no central planner directing them and telling people to go out and help. They did it on their own. Maybe it was out of kindness.
I see things like that happen quite frequently, actually. Spontaneous order, people just kind of jumping in and helping without anybody directing them or instructing them to do so.
Right. And the guy was obviously embarrassed because, you know, if your lumber gets on the road and is blocking things up, I mean, that is kind of embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But the gratitude that he had, it was plainly written on his face. The relief that he had that people were jumping out to help him and that he wasn't going to be tying up the road for 10, 15 minutes getting all this lumber up.
You know, when you remove authority and you remove the aggression of government and you remove the guy in the funny, weird costume with his shiny badge, people are really, deep down, are really helpful with one another. It's how we've survived through the ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. For the most part, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always the weirdo out there, but generally.
Yeah, they're few and far between.
Yep.
Worms!
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Woof. So before the break, Lou was telling about a spontaneous order moment where people just voluntarily jumped in and helped each other. And then during the break, he had said that that kind of fellowship, that kind of camaraderie, that's what gets people. That's why humans have been able to overcome really horrific things at times. Like, what did you mention, Lou? The Dark Ages. And I said...
The Dark Ages, the Ice Ages.
Ice Ages.
There's been different times where the heat was just immense. Let's not forget that short little stint with Disco. Oh,
Disco.
Yeah. I mean, these are things that could have taken humanity out of existence, and the cockroaches would have been looking at these 45s and 78s saying,
"Oh man,
never again."
Okay, now wait a minute. Now 78s, that goes way before Disco. It's true. Like now, and you're talking about Disco. I actually have a little box full of 45s from way back then.
Actually, back then, I think it would have been 45s and 33s. I don't know if they were doing the 78s anymore.
No.
I think they'd been abandoned.
78s went out around, I don't know, the 60s or something.
I think 78s were replaced with 8-tracks.
Oh, that was
a lovely thing. And yes, for those of you doing the math at home, yes, I am 29 in warm years.
If you can remember 8-tracks, oh, and Disco, oh my. Yeah, humanity survived 8-tracks and Disco. We can face anything. Bring on the roaming hordes
the apocalypse.
Oh yeah, that's nothing. I saw Disco and 8-tracks come and go. Just don't tell me about, you know, meteor impacts. Pfft, come on.
Yeah.
That's nothing compared to Casey and the Sunshine Band. Oh my. So
Casey and the Sunshine Band, and look what solved the problem for that though. It were people making their voices heard through the market,
yeah,
not through political action, but through the market.
What'd you start to say, Lou?
Oh, it was something ridiculous. I don't remember what it was, but I'm pretty sure it's ridiculous. Oh, I know what it was. It was the fear of communism.
Oh.
Because you have to remember, you know, the Reds, you know, the communists were going to come in here and they were going to outcompete America economically. I never mind all the starvation, but they were going to come in and, you know, like some guy in a long trench coat and a fedora, you know, obviously a colonel in the KGB because, well, everybody in the KGB is a colonel. But he's just going to walk into America and he's going to look around and he's going to wave his hand and says, okay, I declare communism to be. And, you know, people are going to go, and it'll be like in Blazing Saddles when they saw the new sheriff arriving, how they were gasping with fear and everything else. And then, you know, he says, darn it, I said you're communist now. And everybody says, okay, we're communists because we're domesticated house pets, happy to beg for a belly rub and a treat. We will obey. Anyway, so as I said, it was something ridiculous. But, you know, I was never really afraid of communism once I found out what communism was.
You know, let me throw this in, too, in a little thing about, you know, there was some people like Murray Rothbard and like Mises and Hayek and some of these people like this that back in the day when there were so many, especially the hard right-wing people that were scared to death of communism. Mm-hmm. And guys like Murray Rothbard and von Mises and other people like that, they tried to explain, look, you really don't have to worry about communism. It's not economically viable. It will not stand on its own 2 feet. It will eventually collapse on its own. And all you have to do is just give it space and let it do that, and it's going to collapse. Mm-hmm. But the right-wing extreme people, and I'm not saying this that, oh, we should have been believing the leftists because they're just as bad. They're the actual communists we have to worry about. But the right-wing people who were so afraid of the communists and afraid that there was a communist behind every corner and behind every trash can, they didn't understand that if they just believed in their own market system, it was so much superior to communism that communism never could have taken hold anyway. You didn't need to have all these giant military buildups and programs to defeat something that's self-defeating.
I honestly don't think that they thought that communism was that big of a threat. I think that they used the potential threat of communism to create fear and dependency in the populace.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think they probably understood just exactly what you're saying, that communism could not survive on its own and eventually would collapse. But they, you know, in order to, you know, go along with what they're supposed to do and in terms of what they believed, you know, they had to instill fear, you know, in order to control the people. So
let me share a little story with you. I was in the army when the Berlin Wall came down. I was over in Germany at the time. Oh, and by the way, nobody knew it was coming. Nobody saw it coming. Everybody was shocked. Everybody was freaking out. But when you look at the collapse of the Soviet Union and, you know, state communism collapsing, right after the wall came down and, you know, they're talking about unification and all this other nonsense, I says to one of the old-timers, I says, "Hey, Sarge, so what's the deal now that the Cold War is over and we won, what's going to happen to us? We got to go get real jobs now that we've defeated the only formidable opponent out there." And he just looks at me like an old timer would, and he says, "Son, don't you worry. There'll be a new enemy soon enough."
Kind of ideology to, you know, continually kind of keep this thing perpetuated.
Mm-hmm. And I think about a month later, U.S. forces invaded Panama, and less than a year after that,
Grenada.
Grenada was a long time ago.
Was before that. Yeah, it was like in Iraq in 91.
Yeah, Panama and then Iraq.
Another bit of twisted irony. When I enlisted, Saddam Hussein and Iraq were the U.S. ally.
Oh yeah,
because they were propped up to fight against the Iranians in that Iran-Iraq war, mm-hmm. and the Soviets, of course, were the enemy. By the time I got out, Saddam Hussein had been invaded and had numerous bombs dropped upon him, and Russian Federation forces were training at Fort Leonard Wood in joint exercises.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we've very always Orwell been at war with exactly. Mm-hmm.
Fill in the blank.
Yeah. Eurasia and East Asia.
Yep, straight out of 1984. It's all a show. You know, it's like Hamlet said to Ophelia, "Believe none of it. It's all an act. Believe none of it." That's a little too obscure for talk radio, though. They'll be like, "Hamlet who?"
Well, Hamlet? No. Not our listeners.
Is that sophisticated
and intellectual?
Hamlet is text language for ham and cheese omelet because everything's abbreviated.
Did you just come up with that?
Yes, I did.
Oh my gosh! No, you're actually, amazing.
I foresaw this conversation going like a month ago, so I jotted it down. And I knew the exact time and moment that it would happen, and I just had it on the tip of my tongue. During the last break, I actually pulled my notes up on the netbook so that I could read it. And as a matter of fact, on the way home, I had those notes on my cell phone, and I read over them so I could deliver the line flawlessly.
We did very well.
And that's why central planning works, and everybody should convert to full-blown socialism right now.
Lou is a professional.
I'm kidding. I just say I'm that funny.
You really are. I remember like the first couple of times I ever heard you on The Fiends, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, this guy is funny. He's making me laugh."
And then when you met me for the first time in real life,
well, like, same thing.
Yeah. My God, he's a lunatic. But anyway.
I like lunatics.
Yeah, lunatic. But anyway, I want to divert a little bit here. I got a question for Ben because you are our resident theological scholar. I want to talk about Jesus being the first advocate of jury nullification.
Oh,
and that was when the prostitute was brought to him.
Yeah,
and the people said the law says
she must be stoned.
She wasn't a prostitute. She was an adulteress.
Yeah, she was caught in the act of adultery.
Okay, all right. Well,
that is a good example of Jesus practicing jury nullification.
Okay,
yes.
So give us a quick recap of the events, if you can, Ben.
Yeah, so Jesus was, you know, hanging around in Jerusalem with his buds, and they're all hanging out and just taking it easy. And there was two particular groups of Jewish leaders that were kind of like the, if, for lack of a better explanation, the Protestants and the Catholics of the day for within Judaism. And that was the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And the Pharisees tended mm-hmm. to be lawyers and attorneys and really into not only civil law, but also the Jewish law. They were really, you know, highly trained on that. And so
to the letter.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, jot and tittle comes from that, from Hebrew phrases of you know, characters in Hebrew writing that had to be absolutely perfect in order for the writing to say what they wanted to say. So anyway, so they caught this woman in adultery, and the punishment, according to the law, was to be stoned to death. Now, the trick here is if you were to enact Jewish law on the streets of Jerusalem in that time frame, then the Romans would have found you guilty of murder, and they would have crucified you and killed you. So the Pharisees had this perfect situation where they could bring this woman who was caught absolutely in the act of adultery, bring her before Jesus and say, now the law requires that she be stoned to death, and you will either reject the law and let everybody else here see that you're not really a godly person, or you'll embrace the law and we'll have something to take to the Roman government and say, look, he's breaking the law, now we can crucify him. And so Jesus knew it was a trap to begin with. So they bring this woman, they throw the woman at his feet and make the accusations, and they say, now, you know, isn't this true? Don't we have to stone her now? And Jesus started scribbling on the ground with his finger, just kind of, or maybe a stick. He's just kind of scratching around on the ground. And some theologians have questioned, perhaps he was writing something like, you know, Bill over there is guilty of something that happened last Tuesday. Who knows what he was scribbling?
I've heard that before, yeah.
But no matter what he was scribbling, he said the words, whoever is without sin, let him cast the first stone. So whoever can really judge this woman, do it. And they eventually left, because nobody is without sin and nobody could judge her. And then he looked at the woman and he says, where are your accusers? And she says, they have gone. They, you know, they have left. And he says, neither do I accuse you. Go on.
Yep. I love that story.
Yeah. And there's some good, there's another case of jury nullification in Jesus's life. I'll touch when we get back. Didn't work out so good, though.
I'm going to cap that story off when we get back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. So Lou had a little extra to add to our discussion there about Jesus and the woman. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, there must have been some clouds over Bear Saskatchewan or something like that. But anyway, I'm going to do a quick little recap. So an adulteress was brought before Jesus, and Jesus was standing around doing his thing and minding his own business. And the guys that brought him there, the Jewish elders, something like that.
Pharisees.
Yeah, the Pharisees. Best summarized as considering them lawyers, guns, and money. But anyway, they brought this woman to Jesus and said, well, the civil law says that she must be stoned for her sins. And Jesus said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. And yeah, that is the first case of jury nullification. But something else that I want to point out, Jesus violated Romans 13, because he did not submit to the civil authorities that are ordained by God.
Okay, there's a whole show we could do on that one.
Yeah, well, wait, let me top this off. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Ben, because you are our theological scholar. Romans wasn't, the book of Romans wasn't yet written,
correct?
Was it?
No, it wasn't.
During the times of Jesus?
Correct. It was.
Okay. So if Jesus so flagrantly violated Romans 13 of submitting to the civil authorities because they are ordained by God, you know, Mao, Stalin, Andrew Jackson, Hitler, you know, all the great serial killers. If Jesus did not practice submitting to the civil authorities, then why was Romans 13 written in the first place?
That's a really good question. I think you wrote something about this, Ben.
Yeah, actually, I steal from Randy England on this. My knee-jerk reaction is to say that, well, Romans was written by Paul. Paul never met Jesus. And I have a lot of questions about Paul's authenticity. But Randy goes in a different direction. He points out that Paul was imprisoned by Nero at the time that he wrote that. And Paul wrote a bunch of what could easily, if you understand that Paul is imprisoned by a crazy leader, Nero, who enjoys dipping humans live in hot wax and then lighting their hair on fire and watching them burn. If you understand that that's the Nero that actually had Paul imprisoned and eventually killed Paul, then you start to understand that there's a good likelihood that a bunch of Paul's writings were satirical, aimed directly at Nero. And if you take Paul's writings in that tone, it gives them a whole different meaning as you read
through. It really does.
But again, I'm not even
convinced. Paul was in Gitmo.
Yeah, essentially he was. Yeah, yeah. There was routine torture in the prison in Rome. And Nero was, next to Caligula maybe, Nero was really one of the most twisted people in Roman history. But I should throw out the other thing too. You know, Jesus was eventually arrested and taken before the government. He was taken before the governor of that area, and then eventually he was taken before the king of Palestine at the time. And in both trials, he was accused by the government of the day. And in one of those trials, the guy doing the judge, so to speak, in the trial, said, "You know what? I don't find this guy guilty of anything, but I will say that we have to release somebody on this special holy day that we're having."
Oh yeah.
And so, who would like, you know, essentially giving the jury, the people, the opportunity to nullify Jesus' sentence? And they rejected Jesus, and they nullified the sentence of a known robber and murderer. And so a different guy got his sentence struck and thrown out by jury nullification, and Jesus went ahead and died. So as much as I like jury nullification, if you're one of the people nullifying a jury, good for you. But don't go into a court expecting and depending on a jury to be nullified, because there's just so much that you don't have control over in there. Anyway, back to you, Lou. Back to you, Diana.
Well, the problem with the jury not releasing is it hasn't yet been written. Sorry, they're just status. Dare I say, bootlicking Tories supporting the thin red line, because the redcoats are here to defend British freedom.
Well, they did have a British flag, and it is Flag Day.
Yeah.
what were those colonists thinking? Didn't they see the flag out there on the British ship?
Yeah, well, I think it was General Howe that said to the Sons of Liberty, he says, "Look, all this libertarian stuff is nice, but if you guys can't behave yourself and follow our laws, you need to move to Somalia." And at which point he got himself a barbed wire tattoo going around his arm, cut a goatee into his beard, and that was the move to Somalia starter pack.
Stick with us. We'll be right back after the hour break.
Well, without the laughing kitty, I gotta go. Peace out, y'all.
Bye,
Worms.
Diana. Thanks, Diana.
Meow, meow, bye. Meow, meow.
Meow.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Are broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And my name is Ben Stone. With me is Lou. And Lou, how are we guarded from someone using our intellectual property?
The Freedom Fiends radio show is protected by a BIPCOT no government license. That means anybody can use it except for government.
And you can learn more.
A podcast for everyone.
You can learn more at BIPCOT.org, BIPCOT.org. Yeah, go ahead, Lou.
Yes. I do have to throw in the obligatory. Obama is a liar, a socialist, his feet stink, and he puts the execute in executive branch.
And as everyone often says, he has killed more babies with drones than all other Nobel Peace Prize winners combined.
Yay! What an accomplishment. Oh, wait a minute. USA, USA, America, Feinstein, yeah.
We're number one at killing little brown people with hellfire missiles from the sky. Piloted by guys with pimple-faced acne problems in bunkers in the Nevada desert that never see the light. Who's the most dangerous thing they do over the course of the day is to drive to work on Las Vegas freeways.
I don't know. All those snack chips that they have are pretty dangerous, too. Their arteries are as hard as their soul.
Oh, man. So
yeah, that was cold.
But deserve it. I mean, you know, how goofy is it to call these people heroes who sit in a trailer in the Nevada desert and essentially watch blips on a computer screen until they see one that their boss tells them to eliminate, and then they, you know, fire a Hellfire missile on it, and that's a hero. That's what kind of warfare is that? That is really sad.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of people sitting in trailers shooting blips on a computer monitor. Is called space invaders, and they're not heroes either, but they're less detrimental to humanity than the drone pilots.
Very true.
So anyway, yeah, if you don't like human sacrifice, why don't you just become a virgin and change the volcano from the inside?
There you go. You know, a lot of people didn't get the jokes that you were putting together with the Longer Leash campaign. There was some people that really objected to that. It's like, well, that's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. But it's really pretty basic. It's like, if you're trying to use the political means to change the political means, you're trying to change the system from the inside, what are you really trying to do? Are you not just, a pet begging for a longer leash and then calling that freedom? I think we stole that from Butler Schaefer in the long run, didn't we?
In a way, yeah, because one of his quotes was, when I see people waving copies of their constitutions as symbols of their liberty, it reminds me of dogs that have learned to carry their own leashes in their mouths.
Yeah.
Now, for those that are thinking that that it's serious and that it's trying to use the political means to change the political means, those would be thick libertarians. I don't mean thick as in social justice warrior libertarians. Thick. I mean thick as in thick in the head, and they went full potato. Never go full potato.
Thick as in thick. I are libertarian. So, yeah, it makes no sense at all. You know, we were talking about Jesus before the break, and, you know, I made a meme. I threw it out there a couple times. I've done it in a couple different ways of showing Jesus being tempted. There's a famous old painting from a couple hundred years ago of Jesus being tempted by Satan. And it says, you know, that Jesus, in the story, Jesus rejected the temptation. The temptation was literally the devil offered him a role in government. He said, I have been given charge of all these great governments of the world, and I can give them to you if you'll just, you know, obey me. And Jesus rejected him and said no. And so, you know, Jesus literally chose not to use the political means to change politics and change government. Instead, he rejected all of that as the work of Satan. And yet so many Christians today think, oh, we're going to get behind this politician and he's going to do so good for us because he goes to church, or he, you know, he calls himself a Christian, or he wears this particular thing on his clothes, or he does this, or he says that, or whatever. But Jesus didn't do that. The guy that you're using as your example rejected that system. And, you know, maybe had he gone to Rome, got himself elected, gone to Rome, and then worked to change the process, maybe he could have stopped crucifixion altogether. That wouldn't have accomplished what he was after. I mean, if you just think about it, the whole process is a little bit goofy.
Okay, so let me get this straight. The devil was in control of all of the governments, all the kingdoms, all the states, correct?
That's what he told Jesus.
Okay. And of course, Jesus being the Son of God, or God himself, he would know if the devil was lying then, right?
Yeah, if he knew the devil was, if the devil was lying, it wouldn't have been a temptation. So it had to have been true. Otherwise, right. Jesus wouldn't have been tempted.
So it wasn't the devil also the creator of those states? Or did he just kind of co-opt them later on?
I argue that he was the creator of them. I would argue that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the devil says to Jesus, this can all be yours. All you have to do is obey me and my authority.
Yep. Bow to the state.
So once again, okay, so how many examples of Jesus rejecting Romans 13 are we up to this episode alone?
Good point. Yeah, you know, the whole idea of using the government to fix the government is just kind of goofy. It's kind of like, you know, and if when people say it, they'll always break it down with those simpleton arguments like, won't you think of the children? But just, you know, we've got to do something. We've got to start somewhere. They always use that phrase. We've got to start somewhere. We can't just sit on the couch and do nothing. We've got to start somewhere. Well, doing something stupid is not starting somewhere. You're not accomplishing what you think you're accomplishing.
One could say that we are already somewhere.
Yeah.
And one could say that while people were trying to start somewhere, we got from where we were to where we are today.
It's kind of like saying, so, let's steal cars to get money because we have to start somewhere. Let's rob a bank to get money because we have to start. How about getting a job instead? No. That takes too much. You know, it takes too long to get going if you just get a job. Why don't you just go rob a bank? Then you can get money. That'll get you started because you have to get started somewhere. So then you say, well, robbing a bank would be immoral. Robbing, you know, stealing to get the money would be immoral. Yeah. And using the aggression of government to accomplish what you want, isn't that immoral?
Well, let's take it a step further. Because this comes to my thing, idiotic, foolish, throw in a bunch of other adjectives that mean the same thing. Because what happens is, okay, let's say you become the state. Let's say you don't take the route of Jesus and, you know, you sign on and obey Satan and become the state for the purpose of doing good, by the way. So what are you going to do? Are you going to be able to say, okay, you know, we strike down everything that was in existence and we're going to start brand new, starting right now? No, it's not going to happen, because people are going to say, well, we have to take these laws out incrementally. We can't get rid of a law until we replace it with another equally stupid and bad law. So we have to go at these things, you know, one at a time. We need to tackle this subject here. And let's say you're tackling, seatbelt laws. Because, you know, click it or ticket. Humans have leash laws just like dogs. Let's say you're attacking the seatbelt laws and throw in a couple other traffic laws. While you are messing with those, the other laws are still in existence.
Yeah.
While you are messing with those, marijuana prohibition is still in existence and still being enforced, by the way. So when you try to take on government by these little things one bit at a time, I'm sorry, but that's like trying to break government like that is like trying to break the casino by putting the penny slots. And you know, once you see that it fails, you get the old Keynesian thing of, well, we just didn't gamble enough money. You know, we didn't throw enough money at it. We didn't play enough games. Let's play Russian roulette and try and change government, because that's what happens when you're trying to get involved with government, play around with it. You are playing Russian roulette.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, government as a casino is a perfect analogy, because when you step into a voting booth, you know, your rights are being gambled away. Your rights are the chips.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe you walk out of there with the same amount of rights that you went in with, but there's one thing that you have to remember. The house always wins in the end. Government, like casinos, is not built upon people walking out with all of their own money and then some.
Yeah. Yeah, the odds are played in such a way in every single successful casino. If they stay in business more than a few months, then you know that they're a successful casino. And you know that they are working the odds so that they always win more than they lose. And who are they winning that from? The people who are going into the casinos and playing. That's how it works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you cash in your rights for chips and you take them into that casino called government and elections, you are literally gambling. Now, there's a number of things that have been popping into my head on the subject. Fortunately, not while I'm driving so much. But if I were a mini statist, if I were one of these people that, you know, says, well, we got to get back to the Constitution, you know, the limited government and the specific, you know, enumerated powers, you know, like the Fugitive Slave Laws in Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3. If I were one of these people, I would have to ask myself, at what point do I give up on running this fool's errand? Because you're not on Facebook anymore. I am, and I'm a member of a lot of different groups, like the Tea Party socialists, the ones that say, you know, it's not socialism when we do it. You know, when we do it, it's not big government. When the Democrats do the same thing, it is. I'm a member of some of those groups, and I'll go through and I'll look at what they say. And then I also see, you know, posts from the left Democrat-leaning type folks. And I really have to wonder, particularly with the constitutionalist, mini-statist, limited government unicorn chasers, at what point do you give up on that? Because I see these posts on there. One guy in the Campaign for a Tiny Bit More Liberty group is constantly posting about the corruption in the governor's office, in the AG. You know, so he's really into, you know, watching the state government. And I've known this guy for, oh gosh, at least 3 years. And every day he posts something else. And at what point does he realize that it's a trend?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back from this trip to the market.
Worms.
Wines.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Rocking and or rolling. Hey, Lou.
Hey, 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 country and or western.
Both kinds of music. We have both kinds of music, country and western.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
So anyway, let me get back to my rant here.
Go right ahead.
I was describing a conservative Republican type. He has joined the, I think he's part of the U.S. Taxpayers Party now, which is, I don't know, kind of like the Stockholm Syndrome Party. But anyway, he's always constantly posting about these different scandals that are going on in the corporate welfare. Michigan is in the, just started the second term of a Republican governor who is really not a whole lot different than the previous Democratic Party governor. And she wasn't just a socialist. She was Canadian. So that, and that should give you an idea. She was actually born in Canada. But anyway, so the two are indistinguishable, kind of like Romney and Obama and Bush and Obama and, you know, basically the rest of them. So anyway, he was also complaining about the corruption and the corporate giveaways and, you know, the state welfare, you know, the business welfare, corporate welfare. So my thing is, how many consecutive administrations do you have to complain about these things? Because he's been monitoring this stuff closely for at least 20 years. So how many years do you have to go back and see that nothing changes before you give up on this unicorn of a government that only does what is right and acts like Jesus and all this other stuff? How many consecutive administrations of the presidency do you have to go through before you give up on it? If you believe in the sacred oath to uphold and support and defend the Constitution and to obey that Constitution, how many violations per year per politician do you think is acceptable? If the Constitution is so great, not a single violation should be terrible. So if you believe that about the Constitution, and then you say, well, Rand Paul might violate the Constitution once in a while, but he's better than the rest of them. Okay. All right. So he's the tallest midget in the circus, because that's what happens when you're the best senator in the Senate. But if he violates the Constitution, then you're going to mean nothing if you're going to give him a pass for it. So at what point, you know, can they set a point to where they would say, you know what, this is where I draw the line. This is where I say, I've had enough, I'm going to quit. And none of them can draw that line.
They never will.
And my personal opinion is, if they can't tell a point to where they would quit, where they would admit that it can't work, they probably can't either tell you, you know, why they keep doing it.
Yeah.
They can't give you an answer.
Yep.
So, end rant, close parentheses, in quotation marks, stuff like that.
It really is sad seeing somebody who has invested their whole life, you know, in understanding politics and being upset about it every single day and watching the news every day and reading these stories and thinking every day that they're going to wake up tomorrow and suddenly voting is going to matter. And suddenly those people in politics, all those dirty, rotten scoundrels that we know, that's what they are. We know politicians are dirty, rotten scoundrels. And all of a sudden tomorrow, somehow, some magic thing that you've done, you waved your flag at them enough times, or you hit that vote button enough times.
Really hard.
You hit that vote button so hard you bruise your thumb. And all of a sudden, those people in Washington, D.C., or in your state capital, or in your city government, or whatever, they're just going to suddenly stop and go, you know what? We're dirty, rotten scoundrels. Let's stop it and be honest. Oh, okay. I mean, it's no different than thinking like, you know, some well-known mobster like John Gotti's dead now. But let's take John Gotti for an example. John Gotti gets up one morning and he's walking around doing his normal thing, you know, ordering people executed, ordering extortion and all of this. And all of a sudden he says, you know what? It just dawned on me. I'm an immoral person doing bad things. I'm going to make the mafia good. And the odds of that happening are exactly the same as a senator doing it. Because the jobs are the same. It's like that old line, you know, there's this line in the movie The Godfather where the very naive girlfriend of Michael, of the main character in The Godfather, she says to him, you know, you got to get out of this. This is a horrible business. And he says, well, my dad is an important man. He's like a senator. And she says, senators don't have people killed. And he looks at her and he says, who's naive now? I mean, it's the same job. Michael was right. I mean, it's the mafia is exactly like all other forms of government, except they're just not in power right now. They have been in power at times, but they're not right now. But that's basically all it is. Go ahead.
Well, the mafia also is better dressed, has more style. They don't really do a lot of executions because for them, war is bad for business.
That's true. They actually want to have a profit. Something governments don't understand.
Matter of fact, the mafia provides stuff the government prohibits. True. So they are a service provider.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Uh-huh. Freedom Fiends Radio.
Oh, yeah.
So Lou and I wanted to talk about this situation, and we're going to quote a friend of ours who referred to it. But the situation was where this guy, who was a college professor, got arrested and charged, and he actually lost the case and ended up being found guilty of trespassing on the campus where he is employed and works as a professor. He was there. He's also a libertarian candidate, and he was running for an office. And they had a polling place on the campus, and he was walking across the campus. It's kind of a messed up story. But ultimately, you know, as the Libertarian Party candidate, he was attempting to change the process from the inside, like we've been making fun of for the last hour or so. And in the long run, what it cost him was the fact that now he has been found guilty of trespassing because he was where he worked, walking where he was supposed to walk, doing essentially what he has to do his job. And they still, I mean, they cheat. This is a thing with, like, you go, if you deal with the government and you think that you can use magic words or trickery, or you think you can present all the right, you know, all the right facts and get them to give you an honest judgment, you misunderstand the nature of the beast you're dealing with. They're not honest. They have all these written out laws, and then they'll ignore them. In the long run, the judge will do whatever he feels like doing, and he'll instruct the jury to do anything that he feels like instructing them to do, because he controls it all. You can't play their game and expect to win. You can't win against the House. Anyway, so that was my rant, but I was going to read Kyle's quotes here. Go ahead, Lou.
Excuse me, Ben. I want to summarize what you just said about Scotty's case. I've met Scotty once or twice. He's a real nice guy, but he you know, like you described, thinks that he could change the system from the inside. And to just summarize everything that you just said, Scotty tried to limit government. Government limited Scotty. Sorry, bro.
That's the truth. I mean, that's how it works.
You are he is worse off now than when he started. Yeah. All because, you know, he's a Libertarian Party member and he has to run for and lose miserably at an election every 2 years.
So Kyle's comments were pretty good. Kyle says, okay, a couple of quotes by Kyle. He says, always be closing. For those of you libertarians who say things like, we need to learn how to market our ideas better, what exactly are you selling? What's the close? What does making the sale mean? If there was somebody paying you a commission, what would your commission be based on? You can't sell an idea. And I think Kyle makes a really good point there that is often ignored by people.
I am 95% in agreement with him. Now, probably closer to 99. You can't sell an idea. I spent a number of years working in sales.
Yeah.
And some of the things that you're selling, I mean, they're very tangible. I mean, if you're selling a new car and you have that car on the lot, you can, you know, put that person in there. They could sit down. They could get comfortable in the seat. They could take it for a test drive. That is very tangible. It becomes a little bit less tangible if you don't have a model in stock. Or let's say you're selling timeshare, which is purchasing a resort. And I did offsite timeshare sales, so I was in the Metro Detroit area selling resorts in Myrtle Beach and all over the country. I didn't have a tangible product that I could show people. You know, I could show them pictures that I had taken of my trips to these places, and they're wonderful places. But I could not, you know, put them into a living room and have them sit down. So that's an intangible. And liberty is an intangible because, one, there's not a heck of a lot of examples of it. And, you know, do people really want to purchase it? Do they really want to be responsible for themselves? But ultimately, it's the having an example, having a piece of product that you can put in their hand that they can take for a test drive and see just how much they like it. Now, we could talk about Austrian economics all day long and talk about, you know, well, the free market would look like this, but can we show examples? Are we using our actions and our daily activity to, you know, demonstrate how this works and the agorist marketplace works and does this? And there's a number of business models out there that do this, and those are actually using the economic means instead of the political means, but it's an actual example and it's tangible,
you know. And Kyle also
because that will really play into this.
Yeah. Kyle actually mentioned in that same comments, he said Uber has done more to move the world towards the realization of libertarian goals than every single libertarian activist ever put together. It's not much, but more is really a low bar here. In other words, he's saying all what's called activism, you know, all the hoopla and all the getting arrested and everything, all of that stuff. Here's this company, Uber, that's actually out there doing something that is making a difference. And I think he was comparing it mostly to all the, like, LP party type activity. I'm not sure. I don't want to read too much into Kyle's words here. But I think he was talking mostly about all the activity that the Libertarian Party goes through. And here's one company that's done more. And that kind of takes me off on a thing. You know, of late, it's become popular with some libertarian types, especially the old stuffy kinds that were actually around in the Rothbard and Mises days. And they like to complain about things like Bitcoin and the Silk Road and, you know, all those young people and their Bitcoins and that kind of thing. And they'll quote Rothbard because... Yeah, there's this classic moment where, you know, Murray Rothbard, who was a standard of libertarian thinking, got into an unofficial debate with a guy named Sam Konkin. And Konkin maybe didn't have all his economics straightened out in his mind. I'm not here to defend he and his economic outlooks, but in this struggle between the two, Murray was saying, you know, agorism is not the way. Going out there and dealing with black markets, you're not going to get anything accomplished. And so nowadays we have all these, you know, old-timey libertarians who are quoting Rothbard like he's like they've canonized Rothbard, like what he says is set in stone and it's the words of God. That's the kind of level that they put Rothbard into in this. And really, that is appealing to authority, and it's making a great man out of Rothbard, and it's doing all that illogical stuff that we frown upon as libertarians. But here's the problem. When Konkin and Rothbard were having this discussion, there was essentially no internet. Their computers were nowhere near what they are today. You didn't have things like Bitcoin. You didn't have things like black market, operations on. You didn't have the dark web and the deep web and all this kind of stuff. To go back and talk about Rothbard and Konkin and compare that to the discussion now about whether the Silk Road or whether Uber is a good idea or whether Bitcoin is a good idea or whether we should stick with the political means, using Rothbard and Konkin is like going back and saying, well, you know, there was a time when, Henry Ford got in this discussion with Alexander Graham Bell, and they were arguing over whether or not you could have airplanes. It's that kind of nonsensical thing, because the technology did not exist. Rothbard had no way of knowing what was going to happen. We have to look at this now, and what we're seeing now is that there is an unbelievable amount of activity that can take place in black markets and using things like Uber, using, you know, food trucks and food carts, where you are actually making a living wage, and you're doing it in an underground situation without paying taxes, without getting all your permits, and when you're about to get caught, you just move, you go someplace else and make more money. And it's not about, you know, whether or not the technicalities of whether are you a wage slave? And, you know, Konkin didn't like earning a living by getting a wage, and all of that is smoke and mirrors. It has nothing to do with the topic. The people on the Silk Road are still earning wages. They're still, you know, a buying and a selling. The rules of economics still apply, even if you're not going. Like my daughter does a lot of underground work with Renaissance festivals and so forth. She is paid either by the hour or by the job. It's not that these things disappear like Rothbard tried to portray in the argument. Like, you know, all of the wage type stuff just vanishes if you go into agorism. That's not what happens. That's a straw man argument. They still have wages. They have hourly wages. And another thing that's been brought up on this, I'm really kind of running on here, but the idea, like Rothbard says, you're not going to see anybody building cars with contract labor. Well, guess what? Yeah, you do. As a matter of fact, when I was in the jet engine industry, like, you know what? I've been retired for almost 15 years now. 15 years ago, I was contract labor for most of my career in the aerospace industry. And most of the scientists and engineers that I worked with were contract labor. A bunch of that was contract labor, and we literally had contract labor assembling engines. It works in industry. So Rothbard literally didn't know what he was talking about when he was making these arguments, and the whole topic has changed since then. Anyway, so that's my, you know, that's my like 20-minute rant there on the topic. To sum it all up, Rothbard didn't know, and what he said then doesn't count now. Uber and the Silk Road and Ross and all the other stuff like that works, and we see it working. Anyway, so there's my rant, Lou.
You did 20-minute rant in 10 minutes. Something else Rothbard couldn't foresee. You know, when these old codgers, you know, when they get dressed up and put on their tab collars and bell bottoms and wingtip shoes to go down to the Libertarian Party meetings and talk about this debate, they may as well be talking about the first 8-track that the Bee Gees released. And that's a reference to the first hour. But let me give you another example. Now, Uber, I don't know that they're libertarians. I don't know that that's their politics or their philosophy, but what they did was they saw a problem in the in the corporatist taxi market. They saw that people were getting gouged by these taxi fares because of all the regulations that the taxi companies had lobbied for in order to keep out new competition. Well, they went around those laws, and they're not taxis. They're ride shares. Yeah. They're not liveries. So here they are solving a problem. Now, something else, you know, you're talking about the black market. Cody Wilson, Defense Distributed. You know, he had the Liberator that was 3D printed. He has the Ghost Gunner. Mm-hmm. Cody Wilson by himself has done more to preserve firearm ownership than the NRA, the Second Amendment, and every activist walking around a government office waving his flag really hard at the politicians.
You betcha. Absolutely.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon. Lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Pouring flaming hot truth into your ear hole. And we're talking across a pretty good distance here on Fiend Phone.
Now, going back to what we were talking about, and you said that I made a really good point on Cody Wilson.
Yeah, excellent point.
For those of you that believe in firearms ownership and the right to own firearms, I'm not talking about the Second Amendment. I'm talking about the actual right to own firearms and even more the ability to own them. With that Ghost Gunner device, and Jim Babb has one of them, you can produce a lower receiver, an untraceable lower receiver for an AR-15 in a short amount of time and a marginally low cost. So you can actually produce this thing that it used to be you would have to go to a machine shop to do this. But you can do this yourself. All you have to do is get the other parts and put together. And my point is, things like that will do more to preserve gun ownership than, yes, the Second Amendment, the worthless words scribbled on paper. It will do more to preserve gun ownership than the NRA, which is probably the second biggest gun control group right behind the Democratic Party. It will do more than marching around a government office and waving the government's flag at those politicians, begging for a longer leash. Because begging for a longer leash is not going to get you freedom.
You know what, Lou? I wish that I had a Bitcoin for every time I've seen a Constitution hugger, a Second Amendment licker, telling me, this is it, this is the line in the sand, they can come to here and they can come no further, and they get all puffy about it, and they sound like they're really, you know, and then the government does something else and outlaws a particular, you know, ammunition, or they pass another thing, and these people stomp and they sharpen their bayonets and they jump up and down. And that's all they're doing. They keep writing letters to their senator, or they keep sending more money to the NRA. But here's Cody Wilson that is literally doing stuff. And we talked earlier about, we have to start somewhere, or you're going to do the same thing you've been doing for hundreds of years, expecting to get a different result. How about if you do something different that you've never done before, get a hold of Cody Wilson and buy yourself a milling machine that will make your own lower AR. And then just start producing them and selling them, making money off of them. Hey, Rothbard, guess what? Cody's making money. And anybody who buys one of those and starts cutting out their own lower ARs, and they can sell them then and make money. And all of that is the black market. Once it's off the legal part, Cody's doing all the legal part. But once it's off of that, it goes into the black market, and you can make all kinds of money doing it. And that's what Rothbard was saying you can't do. But yes, you can. The more guns that are out there, the more impossible it becomes to outlaw them.
With Rothbard saying that, you know, he is literally talking about the time of BG's 8-track tapes.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, this stuff didn't exist. And no, he could not foresee it. But when you look at what is possible now, I mean, just the little minor things that we take for granted, and the fact that I don't have to go to a library if I want to learn about Bengal tigers.
Yeah.
All I have to do is push some buttons on a computer and it comes up. Oh, by the way, do you know why Patriots always draw their line in the sand?
Why is that?
Because it's so easy to brush it clean and draw it somewhere else. and here's a little something about that line in the sand. If you say this is the line that you will not cross, and you tread on me all day long, just so long as you don't do this one particular thing. And after the government gets used to treading on you all day long and doing everything except for that one particular thing, do that one particular thing. And because you've been tread upon all day long, you know, with everything except for that one thing, you're going to take that one thing, just like you took the 100, the 1,000, or the million other violations.
Wave your flag at the government.
Really hard. And for those of you that don't know, but going back to the market means, with Cody Wilson, he is a libertarian, but there's a guy in Detroit. He runs a Detroit bus company, and he's not a libertarian. As a matter of fact, he's quite the statist. He believes that public transportation is something that government should and must provide. But in Detroit, the city government has an inability to get a very large vehicle to go down the street back and forth multiple times during the course of a day. I think he was about 25 years old at the time. 25-year-old kid takes like $3,500, buys a couple of old school buses, has some graffiti artists spray paint them, and now he's providing bus service in the city of Detroit. And he also has Wi-Fi on there.
And he doesn't have to know economics. He's just doing it by nature.
He's not a libertarian at all, but he's sure acting like one. As a matter of fact, he's acting a lot more like a libertarian than a lot of the libertarians that are out there.
Yeah. Putting feet on it.
Let your life be your testimony.
Hey, good show, Lou. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, Ben. It's always a pleasure to be had.
Say hi to our mutual friend Tom up there.
I will.
Worms.
Happy birthday, Tom. I know it was yesterday, but happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Tom.